Page 124 of The Unfolding is the story of Andy Carr.
I really was not living a life dependent on God. I was self-reliant. I was a self-made guy. You know, I was successful because of how good I was doing. My point of dependence on God came in a hospital room in Boston.
God's story has been unfolding.
Since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in The Unfolding.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. Andy Carr is the Vice President of Development and Marketing at Feed My Starving Children, an organization that's given away more than 3 billion meals to hungry people all over the world. But years ago, Andy was on a very different path. He was the epitome of the self-made man. All of his life, he was driven. He knew what he wanted, and he worked hard to get it. And he was successful, moving quickly up the corporate ladder. It never occurred to Andy to ask God what he wanted for his life.
I grew up in a great Christian home. My mom and dad, they are people of faith, and they have sown seeds into me and had a grandmother who was also a very staunch advocate, I guess, for me and for my life. Grew up in Indianapolis, and my parents remember there was the president of Christian Theological Seminary lived near us in Indianapolis and was good friends with my grandmother. And I remember him saying, you will go into ministry, when I was 5 years old. And I kind of look back at that and laugh with what God has done in my life. And hopefully I can unpack that a little bit here as we have our conversation. But I will say my upbringing and my family was about going to church, and I got involved, and I had a lot of great memories of being involved in youth groups and going to summer camp with church camp and made a lot of friends through that networking. However, I would say that I wasn't the kind of church choir boy necessarily. I was an athlete and so ran hard, played hard, and all of that through my life. But I knew God and I knew Jesus, and I remember many times in my life praying. And, you know, as a child, I had an amazing opportunity when I was 15. I got to go to the Holy Land with my church. Yeah. And so, and I wish I knew now, I wish I knew then what mm-hmm. I know now, mm-hmm. because I would have paid a lot closer attention. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just seeds that God has planted along the way. And I think that's the important thing, Meredith, as we kind of talk about a faith journey is those seeds that are planted in your life and the people who plant those seeds. Remember that you're called to both plant, but also you also are part of the harvest. Mm-hmm. And so I can look back to some of those folks that planted seeds in my life, and some of the fruit that I am bearing now is because of those actions. So it's kind of cool.
Do you remember growing up, did you have a sense about, you know, what you wanted to do with your life? I mean, you talked about being an athlete. Did you think sports were going to be a part of it?
You know, I didn't know that sports would necessarily be a part of it. I enjoyed sports quite a bit and still do. I didn't necessarily think sports was going to be my route. Honestly, at about the age of 15 or 16, I realized sales was probably going to be my trajectory. My dad was a sales guy, mm-hmm. and I went into the family business. We had a sales rep agency. Honestly, that was really what I saw myself to do because I was successful at it.
You were good at it.
And I was on the road traveling as a salesperson, working with my father and his partner's rep agency when I was 16.
Wow.
And I was going to trade shows and we sold to retailers throughout Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, Ohio. Wow. Is where we ended up growing the business. And so it was kind of natural for me, because it was just my personality, and I was very good at it.
Hmm. So you graduate high school. Do you work in your father's business, or what did you do?
I graduated from high school and went to Zionsville High School in Zionsville, Indiana, suburb of Indianapolis, and I had the good fortune of falling in love while I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And my high school sweetheart, Jenny, my wife, and I have been together pretty much forever. Mm-hmm. And so from age 16 on. And so I went down to Indiana University as a freshman, you know, enjoyed school. Okay. I always wanted to go to Indiana. And so I was thrilled that I was going to be there and go into business is what I wanted to do. After my freshman year, kind of a few things unfolded. My wife and I, at the time, not my wife, but we thought, you know what? We're 19 years old. We know what we're doing. Let's get married. And so 1983, Jenny and I got married. Wow. And we moved her down to Bloomington with me. And part of that was, I would say, a faith thing, because we didn't want to just live together. Mm-hmm. And we wanted that to be a God-honoring thing. And through that process, I'll say, you know, I grew up in the Disciples of Christ Church, a more evangelical church. She grew up Catholic. And so we sat down and talked to the priest. And in that conversation, the priest wanted me to commit to raising our children Catholic. And I couldn't do that. And he asked me why. And so I proceeded to tell him and give him my testimony. I remember this, that he turned to Jenny and said, you know, I can't perform your ceremony, but I would highly recommend you to get married. And I think you should do it in his church, because at 19, the testimony that I gave as to why, he said, I've never heard someone with that kind of testimony and that kind of conviction. And he said, I think you two are meant for each other. We will celebrate 39 years of marriage here this August. So wow. I hope he was right.
You sound like you're working really hard as a 16-year-old. You're married by 19. You sound like a kid who really kind of knew what you wanted and just did it.
Oh, I pursued life with vigor. And and I would say that that part of me is the part that, you know, I ran hard, partied hard, and was a life of the party kind of guy. I was very, you know, engaging and successful in that way. But that's the place where I would say, you know, here I am, I'm married, you know, doing my work. And I was a traveling sales guy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was always faithful in terms of with my wife and things of that nature. But God was a kind of convenient God. Okay. And that's where I think that I was not in relationship. I was a fan of Jesus, not a friend of Jesus. Hmm. And the steps that I've taken in life where I got to be a friend of Jesus, even then I would say God continued to say, Andy, I want you to serve me, not just be a buddy. And I think that's where, through my professional career, Meredith, that God continued to show me little glimpses of who he truly is. And by that, I mean, I started seeing the things in the world that just aren't quite right. And boy, that's too bad. It's too bad for all those people that have those issues,
that are suffering,
that are not walking with the Lord, because look, I'm walking with the Lord and look how good he is to me. And I came to realize that God is good all the time. And that is good to me was something that I really misunderstood. And I think that's in a lot of people's Christian walks that I see today, kind of going through the motions. And what Christ did for us is so much more. And our opportunities that he gives us, I think are really kind of described in the parable of the talents. And I think in that way, you know, you've got the 5-bag of gold guy, the 2-bag of gold guy, and the 1-bag of gold guy. And I would say a lot of my life, I kind of lived as that 1-bag of gold guy. And I would say, you know, God, I don't want to mess anything up. So I'm just going to do my thing and let everybody else do their thing. And I'll just keep that talent buried.
And what was your thing? You're pursuing sales hard.
Yeah,
and
I think really telling who Jesus really is and drawing people to the Lord, because I would say if anything in my life, people'd see me go to church and be a good guy. But then during the week I would be out running around, you know, going out drinking, going out, you know, the way my language or any of those kind of things that they'd be like, wait a minute, this is the Christian guy? Well, on Sunday he goes to church, but then, you know,
not a life
surrender at all. But I would never speak ill of who Christians were, but I was not using the talents God gave me.
Did you feel any like dissonance, or at the time, did it just seem like this is just how it is? Was there any part of you that felt, I don't know, even momentary conviction about that?
I think that there was that, you know, but it was flashes of conviction.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It wasn't something that was, you know, monumental as time went on. Then I think is where the greater conviction and emptiness kind of happens.
So you start to feel a little bit of pain because of the way you're living.
Yeah. I really was not living a life dependent on God. I was self-reliant. I was a self-made guy. You know, I was successful because of how good I was doing. And that self-reliance is where I found myself. My point of dependence on God came in a hospital room in Boston.
Oh, really?
Okay. So changing gears here, you know, I had gotten out of the family business. I'd moved into, of all things, the garbage business. And I was a sales guy in the garbage business. I started out as a sales rep and quickly was climbing the ladder and became in upper management. My wife and I had moved to Cincinnati, Ohio when I was with my family business, had three children while we were there. And then I had the opportunity to move out to Boston in the garbage business and take on a larger role in the sales world.
So this on paper sounds like you are super successful.
Super successful. So while I'm there, I start having all of the stresses that come along with running a large corporate business. It tore me up inside, literally, to the point where I was having a lot of intestinal issues. And so I started seeing some doctors, and they went in and said, you know what, we need to take out a part of your intestine.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So it was 1996. I'm in Mass General Hospital.
Wow.
Out in Boston. And I had met with the surgeon, and he removed the part of my intestine, and I was there. It should have been a 3 or 4 day recovery. On about the fourth day, all of a sudden it crashed. What ended up happening was I was allergic to the sutures that they used.
Oh my goodness.
And so the sutures failed. So my intestines were emptying into my abdominal cavity.
Oh my goodness.
I remember very little because I all of a sudden was in crisis. And I remember my wife telling me that they came out on all of a sudden where things should have been, he's getting better, and said, we need to rush him into surgery.
Wow.
And so they rushed me into surgery, and she said, well, what are my options? And they said, well, we can either do this surgery or tomorrow you can plan a funeral. So that took quite a turn. I ended up being in Mass General Hospital for 17 days. And so that part and the humbling was I had to have at that point a colostomy bag put on. And that time that I spent with the Lord in not knowing if I was going to live, I had a wife and three small children living in Boston, my family, nobody was within, you know, they were all in Indiana was the closest to me. And I really just said, God, is this really what you've brought me to? And God said, I never abandoned you. I've never left you. And we had a lot of conversations. And that's the point, Meredith, that I think I really started saying, God, what do you really desire from me?
Being self-made and self-reliant was no longer working for Andy. This humbling experience was helping him realize God might want something very different for his life. Part two of his story is coming up, but first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H Squared Leadership Institute. Habib, you seem to me to be a naturally happy person, but I've heard you say that's not your natural disposition. How do you explain that?
I'm a regular human being. I mean, many people appear a certain way to you. It took a lot of work and training. So, you know, you've heard me talk about out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. That means I'm spewing out what's really in my heart. You know, we get frustrated. We get angry about what's happening around us. We want things to be better. So if we dwell on that, it shows up in our conversation. But if we dwell on different things, what comes out of our mouth is better. That's why I appear to be happy, because I work on what's inside my heart. 1 Timothy 4, Paul is encouraging Timothy, do something good. And he says, have nothing to do with godless myths, but train yourself to be godly. You know, we go to the gym to train ourselves. We go to tennis and train and get our tennis game better or our football game better, etc. We can train ourselves to have better thoughts and have better actions. That's why I say, I'm not naturally like that, but I work at it. And I think a lot of people work at it too, not just me. I encourage people to work at their behavior, not just their sports and at their weight, you know. Mm-hmm. At HabibHabib.com, I have motivational minutes and inspirational minutes and talk a lot about these things. And it's just dwelling on the good in the world. There's still a lot of good in the world and it can make us happier.
And now part two of Andy Carr's story.
The good news is that that surgery, they figured out that I had been allergic to the sutures. So 6 months later, they were able to reconnect. And so I didn't have to live a life as that. And I'm sure there's listeners who have that experience. Mm-hmm. I empathize and sympathize with you. But that time when you're face to face with, okay, God, as a 35-year-old guy saying, is this really the end for me? And what is it that I'm really supposed to do? It started me asking that question of God. And the fortunate part of me getting my health back, and it gave me a better attention to who God really is and a greater meaning. And as a young father, started realizing, hey, I have some really skin in the game here and some responsibility to not just be a casual Christian.
So your life had been pretty hard driving toward that definition of success, being super successful, we talked about. I'm assuming you couldn't be satisfied with the same life or living at the same speed, maybe I should ask.
Yeah.
What began to happen?
It was, I would not say it was more of a crock pot than a microwave. So it started me saying, okay, God, what is it you want from me? About that same time, ironically, I was offered to move from Boston to Minneapolis. That was 25 years ago.
Same company?
Same industry, but okay. I was recruited by another company to move to Minneapolis. And that at that time, you know, it was my wife wanted to be back in the Midwest. You know, New England wasn't where we wanted to end up being. And that's kind of what I had always seen, a trajectory. I didn't know where it was going to be, but it had been a career move. So moving to Minneapolis seemed like the really natural thing to do. And the company that I moved here with, about 6 months after I moved here with, we merged in with Waste Management.
And so, is that who you worked with before?
That is not. I was with a different garbage company.
Okay.
Yeah. Back in, it was BFI was kind of the blue guys. And then Waste Management were the maroon guys. And so I moved here with a smaller company who ended up merging with Waste Management and keeping Waste Management, but had, that was in 1997 that we moved to Minneapolis. And I say the minnow kind of swallowed the whale. Back in the day, the smaller garbage company, USA Waste, bought Waste Management and kept Waste Management's name. And it's the Waste Management that's there today that we see the green, green and gold. So I was part of that that team that had done that. So here I am now running sales and marketing in the upper Midwest for Waste Management, which is a pretty big corporate deal. And through that, I would say God was using me and refining me and exposing me to a lot of circumstances of how to work with people, how to respect people, how to treat people. Mm. And I saw both the good and the bad, because this is a big deal, big company, lots of employees, lots of responsibility. But I started feeling like, okay, God, what more to life is there? And about that time, I was working, I remember, in my office here in the Twin Cities, and I got a phone call from my wife, who said, meet me at this place over, and gave me an address, said they have a pallet of bananas that they don't know what to do with. And so my wife, we had been, you know, at our church, and my wife was more plugged in than I was. She was doing things with helping people all throughout the Twin Cities, and one of the things, she delivered different food to different shelters and things like that. And I was kind of like, oh, that's nice of you. And I was kind of riding the coattails a little bit. So like any good husband.
My wife's a good person,
right? My wife's a good person, so I must be too, right? So I thought, well, I'll do my part. And so I go over to this place and I walked in and it was Feed My Starving Children. I had never experienced Feed My Starving Children before. Yeah. So I walk in, there's music playing, there's people with hairnets on. And I go, wow, what's going on? They're like, oh, well, we're here. You know, we pack food. We feed kids all over the world. I'm like, well, I'm here to pick up the bananas. And they're like, oh, thank goodness. We didn't know what to do with them. I'm like, well, what do you mean you didn't know what to do with them? You just said you feed children all over the world. And they're like, no. We send food to countries across the globe, and it's a non-perishable food, vitamins, vegetables, soy, and rice. It's put together. That's what the volunteers are doing. They're packaging these meals up. And I said, well, that's really cool. Well, why do you have bananas? And they're like, well, that's kind of funny. You see, about 9 months ago, there was a hurricane that went through down in Central America and Honduras. And so we sent a truckload of food down there for relief. And today, back on the dock, the bell rang and there was a truck with a pallet of bananas and a thank you note from Honduras.
It was a thank you gift?
A thank you gift that people of Honduras sent to Feed My Starving Children. And they're like, we don't know what to do with the bananas. We don't do that. We don't do local food shelves. We send stuff internationally. And so we called this church who said, well, I know who you need to call, this lady, Jenny. And so
Jenny called Andy.
And so she said, get your Explorer and meet me over there and pick up these bananas. And so I said, this is incredible. So tell me more about this feeding kids. That is where God grabbed me. And they said, well, this year we will produce 18 million meals. And it's done through donors give to Feed My Starving Children. We buy all the stuff. Volunteers come in. We package up the meals and we ship them across the globe. The organization's been around since 1987. But a really cool thing happened just a couple years ago in 2003. We were founded on Christian principles, but in 2003, we really put a stake in the ground. And the most meals we had ever done before 2003 was 3 million meals. And this year, after we put that stake in the ground, we've seen more and more people starting to come and donate and participate. And this year, we're going to do 18 million meals. That's amazing. And God just grabbed me at that point, Meredith, and just said, Andy, you need to be a part of this. So I started volunteering. I started bringing my teams of people to be a part of it. I started telling all my friends and neighbors and anybody that would listen, hey, you got to go check this place out.
Were you doing meal packing? What were you doing?
I was just a volunteer and a donor, you know? And so I started contributing financially. And I saw how whenever I would bring like groups of people, like my teams of salespeople and operations people, that there was something that changed because they would put on a hairnet and all of a sudden they were all equals and they started working together for a common good. And at the end, you always prayed over the food. And I saw people that I had no idea. And I don't know, some of them may have never prayed in their life, but they started looking to me and saying, well, if this is, he's bringing us together, he must be. And so I would have people come and ask me later, would you pray for me? Mm-hmm. I saw that you prayed with us and I was kind of a weird thing. I never really had been asked that kind of thing. So I really felt God drawing me to be more engaged with this. I did a career change around that time. In 2006, I moved over and guys who I'd been in the garbage business with, some of the senior leaders had joined up with some private equity guys. And we ended up, they recruited me to be the executive VP of sales and marketing for a company that put air in your tires and vacuums at convenience stores and gas stations all across the United States. And they said, we want to combine a bunch of things in the U.S. and we want to expand into Europe. Wow. And they knew who I was from my industry days. And they said, I think you're the right guy to lead our sales and marketing efforts. So I left the garbage business and jumped into that. And God continued to use me in working with that opportunity because I remember I started thinking, how can I use the business opportunity to have some benefit? So in 2008, I was at a conference in Phoenix and God just dropped in my head a program called Air for Charity and said, you need to approach Feed My Starving Children and take what you're doing in this business and put it to use for good. So I contacted our leadership and told them of my idea of this Air for Charity program and got their approval and contacted Feed My Starving Children and said, we would like to put together a program where we would put Feed My Starving Children on these tire inflation machines across the United States, and we would like to make a $100,000 a year donation to wow. the organization. So needless to say, they thought that was a good idea.
Sure.
and so we made a commitment that we were going to do this, and I got to be good friends with the CEO of Feed My Starving Children. So this is in 2009, we launched the program, and the CEO and I, Mark, is still the CEO, Mark Crea, and he and I became, you know, friends. He said, you know, I've never had somebody do something like this, and so we just got to having dialogue back and forth, and I just felt like, you know, this was what God was calling me to do, until 2011. And in 2011, I got an email from Mark and said they were looking for a director of development. I said, this is it. I went right for it. I knew it. And sure enough, I went through the process, went all through the interview, came up, was offered the job, called Mark, was getting ready to dial the phone, and God stopped me in my tracks and told me no.
Oh.
Yeah, that was my reaction. I was kind of like, God, I think you got the wrong number. Meredith, I kid you not, as clear as you and I are talking, God told me no. And so I dialed that phone and told Mark, no, I'm sorry, Mark. I was certain that was my calling. And so I heard no. And I was smart enough to say, if I hear that no from God, that means no. And so I hung up the phone and immediately Satan just was, ha, 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 you just messed up bad. I didn't know how to react. I was sure that that's what God wanted me to do. So I turned back to him and said, God, I could swear that's what you wanted me. I mean, look at how you lined all this stuff up. Mm-hmm, and yet you told me clearly no. And he said, Andy, you never asked. And I was humbled, Meredith, and I said, you know, God, I forgive me for not seeking what your will was in this. And I tell you that because God's desire is that we depend upon him. And what I learned in him telling me no was I never asked him, God, what is your will for my life? I ran forward. I'm a self-reliant guy. I was completely self-absorbed, and I had been self-employed. I had been, you know, successful on my own. I hadn't finished my college degree, and yet I had risen the ranks, and I had become an executive vice president of an international company. You know, I had done any number of things that I had done before I finished my degree, all those things because of how good that I thought I was. So why wouldn't I automatically think that, well, Feed My Starving Children has this job, I've gotten to be friends with them, I'm perfect. So when God told me no, it brought me to my knees. And that's where God wants us to be. And not because he is a God of wrath that says, bow down before me. Because he's a God of love and says, I want you to seek my will because I have immensely more than you could ever imagine. And so, Meredith, the story doesn't end there. That was 2011 when God told me no. And so I started asking God, what is it that you really want from me? And I faithfully marched forward, and towards the end of 2012, we had decided that we were going to sell the company. And so that moment I'll never forget as we kind of progressed from the end of 2012 through April of 2013, there was a lot of back and forth and a lot of uncertainty as to what was going to happen as we had different people, you know, working to say how this sale transaction and when was it going to happen. So I remember towards the end of April, I was down in Dallas, Texas, and I came out of a sales call about 4 in the afternoon, and the phone rang, and it it was the president of our company who said, we just sold the company. The paperwork was signed and we will be, the transaction will be finished here in May. I said, wow, that's awesome. Got on an airplane, flew back to Minneapolis. 9 o'clock on a Wednesday night, called my wife, said, hey, just landed. I'll be home in a few minutes. I live about 15 minutes away from the airport. Get on the park and ride shuttle. And my phone rang. And it was Mark Crea, the CEO of Feed My Starving Children. And I answered and I said, hey, Mark, how you doing? He's like, hey, Andy, how's it going? I said, oh, it's great, man. I just got back in town. I'm just got back to the airport. And he says, hey, I got a question for you. I'm like, yeah, what is it? And he goes, has anything changed recently with your situation at work? Because that job I offered you 2 years ago is back available and I'd like you to reconsider. I said, Mark, what did you say? He said, has anything changed with your situation at work? I said, Mark, we signed the paperwork at 4 o'clock this afternoon to sell the company. Why are you calling me now? He says, well, I was at a late meeting. I'm driving home and God told me call Andy. And it was clear right now. So I did. I said, Mark, I don't know what to say. And he says, well, when can we get together? I said, well, when's good for you? He said, well, how about coffee tomorrow morning? So I said, yeah, let's meet. So I drive home and I walk in the door and I tell my wife, you are not going to believe what just happened. She's like, you just landed. What, 15
what
minutes?
Could have happened?
What could have happened? And I said, Mark Crea called me from Feed My Starving Children. She goes, you're going to work for Feed My Starving Children, aren't you? And Meredith, in that moment, I believe that God was affirming that he wanted this done so that I would see it was his hand, not me, that I was not the one who did this. He was. And it could not have been clearer to me. But I tell that story, Meredith, because I want people to know, do you know what the moral of this story is? What are your bananas? And it's kind of a goofy thing, right? Wait a minute. What are your bananas? Because if you recall back to when I started talking with you about this, that random act of obedience that someone in Honduras did, I have no idea why, sent those bananas to Minnesota. And God used those bananas to introduce me to a purpose and a calling that he was going to do many years later. And I tell you that because every day, Meredith, we have an opportunity, and they may seem weird, to do some random act of obedience. And often, most often, we don't get to see what the result of that is. But I go back to the time where you talked about people in my childhood or different encounters that I believe that seeds were planted, just like those bananas. I don't have the crystal clear recollection like I do with the bananas, because I do believe God has given me this story and this platform for what I get to do now with Feed My Starving Children. Because if you remember, I told you the first time when I walked through that door, they talked about producing 18 million meals.
Right.
This last year, Meredith, we produced 388 million meals.
Mind-blowing.
I've been there now for 9 years. So when I first came, we were producing 190 million meals. Now 388 million. And this next year, Meredith, we have already promised 425 million meals across the globe. And that's before the crisis in Ukraine has erupted, which we've talked about off air here before about the additional needs. And I tell you that because I believe that God prepared me through all those things that I was going through from a business perspective on both a domestic and a global scale. He was exposing me to leadership opportunities, to some big transactions, a lot of dollars, and a lot of people. But through this, the one thing that I've come to learn, and it was always one that really I struggled with, in John, Jesus talks about the fact that I must leave so you can do greater things. I mean, think about that. This is Jesus, our creator, and he's saying, I'm going to leave so you can do greater things. And that hit me one day as I was doing the math, as we got in Feed My Starving Children, you know, I get to be the vice president of development and marketing. So my team is in charge of doing the fundraising and telling all the stories and doing all the things and engaging with people. And I was looking at the math, and I wasn't always the greatest student, but when we got to 365 million meals, I did that math, Meredith, and I divided 365 million, and I, wait a minute, that's a million a day. And I recalled the story that you may have heard of loaves and fishes mm-hmm. that Jesus fed 5,000. And in some instances, they say with women and children, it may have been as many as 15 or 20,000, right? Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he did that a couple of times. There's actually stories in the Gospels of Jesus feeding the 5,000. And my tremendous math skills of figuring out a million a day, every day, and 5,000 on two separate occasions, that greater than sign all of a sudden became like a neon light. Greater than. You will do greater than. And it just became as clear as a bell to me. Jesus was saying that when I leave here and send you the counselor, the Holy Spirit, that's going to live in you and in me collectively, my spirit throughout this world will do tremendously greater things than me as Jesus, the Savior and the man and the Savior. And that was the way that Jesus intended it to be. And it made it so clear to me that all of us coming together, because you see, Meredith, now we have, you know, well over a million volunteers that come and participate with Feed My Starving Children annually and help put together those manna packs that are sent across the world. And I look back at my life and say, Andy, what can you take away from the road that God had you travel? And what I've learned through that is to seek him, to ask him, what is your will for me? To trust him, to not get ahead of him. Don't get out in front. But the times that I thought I was driving, no, that wasn't the case. he was in charge. But he was going to let me think I was so that I could learn. And when you're humbled, turn back to him, seek his will. And so now I'm in a place where I have a platform to be able to share who God really is. And through all of this, you know, the success that Feed My Starving Children has seen in reaching people in desperate need, he's taken me to places. And one of the more ironic places that he happened to take me was in the Philippines. There's a place where all the garbage in Manila comes.
Wow.
And guess what? People live in that garbage. Well, if you remember, I have some pretty significant background with garbage. So I've remained friends and know the guys that are part of the leadership of waste management. And so on the very day that we were traveling into what was called Happy Land, is where the people that live in the place where they bring all the waste to transfer out. Of all the ironies, it's called Happy Land.
Very.
They live there and they scavenge for, you know, anything they can find that might have value. And the partner organization with Feed My Starving Children, we were going in there because they deliver food into this area. And these people live in these little, I don't even know how to really describe, just little whatever they can find as shelter. Well, I get an alert on my phone because I still follow the business world and see all the things that are going. And on the very day that I'm there, I look on my phone and the alert is that on the New York Stock Exchange, that the leadership of waste management is ringing the opening bell. And I open up my phone while I'm standing in the transfer area of garbage in the Philippines. And I see that these guys who I had worked with side by side, who are now the senior leaders of that company, are standing there, and I'm standing in the Philippines handing out food in the name of Jesus. I just said, God, thank you for showing me how you were using that. I continue down that, and we've got a partner that is a tremendous couple that have moved to Eswatini, what was Swaziland in Africa, and she sent me a cross here a few weeks ago. And she calls it a redemption cross. This is an organization that I visited and spent time with. They now have over 300 children that are their children, that they take in children up to 2 years old that are abandoned. And in that part of the world, they have a tremendous rate of HIV/AIDS, and it's just a horrible situation. And so they end up with some of the worst in terms of how these children come to them. And she sent me this cross, and she had put together a business model there where they employ artisans who make beaded items, and that we sell them in the field. Feed My Starving Children Marketplace and have gotten to be great friends with these people. Well, during COVID, they had to shut everything down. So these beads are these little bitty beads that they put on wire and then form them into animals or crosses or different things. Well, they had swept up all the floor sweepings and there was all these beads that were in there. And she's like, nobody, we can't just throw these away. So they had been sitting in a bucket in the corner. They took them out, they washed them, they put them out. And she says, you know, we've got to do something with this. So they started forming them on crosses. And she said, the thought occurred to me, could we take things that were intended for the garbage and sell them and be used to save children that were found in the garbage? Because so many of those children are abandoned and thrown away. And it's just another instance where here comes garbage back into my life. And I think of how much garbage that I've carried through my life. And Jesus wants to wash us clean of that, Meredith. And that whole idea that what he did for us on the cross and the redemption that there is in him, that he wants us to lay down that garbage. And he's just shown me through so many metaphorical and literal ways. You know, as I laid in that hospital bed, I can remember those conversations. God, is this what you want my life to be? And he was telling me, I want so much more, but I want all of you. And I'm still working on that. Don't get me wrong. I am not claiming to be that guy that that has everything figured out. I got a long way to go. But he's plugged me into things. I've been very actively involved in Bible Study Fellowship for the last 12 years and realizing that staying in his word and feeding on him. There's a lot of other places you can feed that are garbage, but feed on him and that he is truly the bread of life. That idea that, Andy, I don't want you to be just with me occasionally. I don't want you to be a fan. I want you to be my friend, but I want you to allow me to show you how good of a Lord that I am. I want you to be my servant. And I think as I've come to realize that and trust in him, that's where he will not lead me wrong.
I asked Andy about the scope of hunger on the planet today. The numbers are devastating. Conservative estimates are that over 6,200 children starve to death every day. So just imagine the biggest high school in your area wiped out every single day. It's a crisis that demands a response. And the good news is we have the cure for starvation, food. We just need to get food to those who are hungry. Feed My Starving Children works to feed the hungry, both in body and in spirit. All of the food they give away is because of the generous donations of people who support the organization. So if you'd like to learn more about donating, about their meal packing centers in Minneapolis, Chicago, Dallas, and Phoenix, or hosting a mobile meal packing event at your organization, head to fmsc.org. Thanks so much to Andy for sharing his story. Thanks to the Unfolding team. They make every episode possible. Elena Nowlin and Danielle Perez, our producer, Jason Rackow, and our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. You can find out how Habib can share inspiration and motivation at your workplace. Just head to HabibHabib.com. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll be back next week with another page of The Unfolding.